thanks very much, Harry, for letting us talk to you. Could you just, for the tape, tell us your name and when you were born?
Yes, my name is William Henry Watterson. I live in Six Links Close. I was born in Douglas on the 21st of July 1922.
And where was that?
In Douglas, yes. At home, actually, at home? I think. Mm-hmm. It was before the days of the Jane Crucall and all these maternity homes.
Mm. And am I right in thinking that was in a boarding house?
Yes, it was, yes. 13 Belmont Terrace.
And your parents' names were?
William Douglas Watterson and Eva Watterson.
So can you remember your early life in Belmont Terrace?
Oh yes, I can remember it quite vividly. We used to take visitors in the summer, and my mother was very, very hard working. My father was also very hard working. He was a grocer. He managed a grocery shop for William Gell at that time. Subsequently, he went into partnership with two other gentlemen, and they opened a shop on Prospect Hill, number 29 Prospect Hill. That was in the early post-war days, really, about 1926 or 7 or something like that. They were there for a few years, and then they moved to the Victoria Stores in Victoria Street, which was a bigger shop and much busier. And they were there, my father was there until he died in 19... Oh no, he wasn't, I beg your pardon. He was there until... Oh gosh, I can't just remember the exact time, but when he suffered ill health and he had to pack it in, so he was there until he more or less was forced to retire.
Mm.
And then I left the firm, and I went to work for G.N. Gore, the wholesale confectionery, as office staff, you know, executive sort of staff. And I was there until the firm was taken over in 19... John, I can't remember.
Don't worry.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. We were taken over by Harbatter and Doherty.
Mm.
Jack Stringer was then the proprietor. And I was there till 1969, when I took a small business of my own on Peel Promenade, which consisted of two shops. One small shop at the harbour end of the promenade, and the other one more in the centre of the prom, and we called it the souvenir shop and the gift shop. The souvenir shop was the big one, and the gift shop was the one over at the harbour side, harbour end. And we only had that for about a year, a couple of years maybe, and it was pulled down to make room for the new harbour board yard. But mind you, it was all ready to fall down then, practically. But I didn't own that, but I did subsequently own the souvenir shop.
Can you tell me a bit about setting up the souvenir shop, you know, your first year and got it going?
Yeah, the first year it was a little bit, traumatic really in a way, but we managed all right. Neither my wife or I had any knowledge of the buying or running of a souvenir shop. We'd all been in business, but we'd never had that type of business, you see. So we relied on the previous owner, who was a very, very good chap, really. He was very helpful. And his wife, who also helped him in the shop, to introduce us to the various suppliers. And this was in the new year, early new year, after about the January, first week in January. These firms used to come over and set up a show in the Villiers or the Sefton or somewhere like that, and used to go around these various places, meet the reps and see what they had on offer for the summer. And then you'd have to place your order for the summer for the, you know, the start of the summer anyway. So we used to go there, start about the first week in January, and we'd do maybe 6 or 8 various firms, place our orders with them for delivery prior to Easter or maybe prior to Whit Week. And from then on, it was a matter of placing your order and coming home and thinking, my gosh, we've spent a lot of money we haven't got at the moment. And you'd be worrying then, but hey, you got used to it. You didn't worry after the first year, you knew you were okay. So those orders placed then would be delivered prior to Easter, and then it was a matter of receiving the stock, checking it, checking the invoices, pricing the items, and stacking them away in the back of the shop, you know, in the storeroom at the shop. So it was quite a busy time. Coupled to that, you did a bit of decorating when you had your shelves bare. You could do a bit of painting and decorating, freshen the place up a bit for the visitors. And then we used to look forward to opening at Easter, which was a good, well, it was a quite a nice little earner, really. You know, you'd take a few bob then. It would all help towards the bills that used to be due in June, middle of June, or race week, really. They used to come over more or less immediately after race, TT week, and they'd all be coming in. Hello, Mr. Watterson, how are you? Hands outstretched, you know, you didn't know whether to shake it or put a check in it. So anyway, that was all part and parcel of the game, and kept in with my bank manager, who was a chap called Revel Flanagan. He was in the Lloyd's Bank Peel branch. I went to see him before I started business, really, and I said, introduced myself. I said to him that I was the new proprietor of the souvenir shop. Come in, Mr. Watterson, come in, sit down. So I said to him, well, I've just called to see if you'll accept my account. Only two, please, come in. I know the business. He said, we've dealt with the previous owners, and that's very, very good of you to come. So anyway, that was very good. He was a very, very fair man. He said to me the first year I was in business, now he said, pay your bills, we'll let you overdraw to whatever you want, really, and we'll settle it up. He said, don't be afraid to overdraw, because I know the situation. You'll be paying money in every week, and that'll be bringing it down. So anyway, we were quite grateful for that facility, really, and he was most helpful.
So in the winter, would you go? You'd go down in the winter, and then you'd balance it in the summer. Was it obviously very seasonal?
Yeah, it was. We didn't open in the winter the first few years because there was no business. We did try it on a Sunday. We opened on a Sunday, but it meant that you had to have your shop stocked up. And, you know, sometimes it wasn't really worth it. But anyway, we did try, because I thought then that it's no use having a business and leaving it lying empty and dormant throughout the winter time, when I could be down there perhaps doing something, not connected with, you know, just selling or taking money. I could be doing something to enhance the appearance of the place and, you know, keep things clean and tidy. And, well, it wasn't total loss, really, but anyway, the first year we did all right. We broke even and paid for a lot of stock. And we lived. We didn't have an awful lot of spare cash, but we lived, and we quite enjoyed it, really. So anyway, when it came to the second year, we were old hands at this, you see. So we thought, well, do the same old stunt. Go to the reps. We did it on our own this time, so we made our own mistakes. And with working at it, you know, you really got the feel of things. You began to think, well, that line didn't do too well. There was no set sort of pattern for buying, you had to rely a lot on your instincts, really, gut feeling. Anyway, we did make one or two little errors, but nothing, you know, drastic. And my wife was very shrewd. She's pretty, you know, pretty good at that sort of thing. So we kept our stock to a fair level. You know, we had a lot of stock of carryover, of course you do in that trade. And instead of sort of buying stock that wasn't moving, we only bought stock that really sort of shifted. Fortunately, we were lucky. We picked a lot of good winners.
What sort of things used to sell well, and what sort of things wouldn't sell
well? Well, we used to sell a tremendous amount of buckets and spades for the kids on the beach. And we used to sell sun hats. In those days, we used to get a bit of summer. And we used to sell all sorts of things that you wouldn't dream of selling. I remember one line we had. It was a line that I'd bought, very reasonable. And they looked quite good, actually. They were like a little flower vase in the shape of a donkey drawing a cart. And we put them on show in places, you know, and stuck a little posy of flowers in them or something, or a little pot with a flower in it. And this was, later on in our career, really. But anyway, this particular time, my wife had gone away, and it left me, my son John, who was home at that time, and Janice, who was a niece, who used to work in the summer holidays. We were on our own in this particular time. It was late on in the summer. You don't expect to be too busy. Anyway, there was a tremendous influx of customers, and I'd bought a lot of these posy balls, you see. So we put them out, and the first lot of people came in. They said, oh, those are nice, aren't they? And they were very, very reasonable, you know. And, oh, yes, those are lovely, aren't they? And I was saying, oh, yes, they're quite nice, you know, thinking, oh, gosh, you know, a load of rubbish, really. But anyway, they seemed to catch the eye, and they were coming in, and they were buying them, and they were going out into the cafe next door, and they'd be saying to their friends in the cafe, oh, we've just been in that little shop next door. He's got quite a lot of stock in there, you know. And did you buy anything? Oh, yes, we bought this. Oh, those are nice. I think I'll go and get some. They were all coming in. We sold about, oh, I don't know how many dozen of those in one morning. And it was incredible, but you had no idea what you were going to sell, you know. I used to sell sweets, cigarettes, ice cream, film, everything you care to mention. Buckets and spades were a great line. Beach goods, swimming trunks. We used to get young men coming in on a hot summer's day. And we used to sell beach gear, like mats, those rush mats that you can put on the beach. We used to sell a lot of those too. And sometimes you'd get an influx of maybe three or four boys would come in and say, have you got, don't suppose you got swimming trunks, have you? So you'd say, yes, what size are you? Oh, I'm 34 or whatever, you see. So you'd get the box down and you'd look at him and say, oh, you're no more 34 than me, mate. Try this 36. You see, and you wouldn't say anything to them. You'd say, and they'd say, oh, yes, those are fine. Yeah, thanks very much. How much is that? And so you'd say, oh, it's so much, and get the money. And what about a towel? Have you got a towel? No, do you sell towels? I'd say, yes, quite reasonable. Because at that time it was, you know, very reasonable. You could buy towels and, well, everything was dirt cheap, really. It's not like now. Mm-hmm. But you'd sell sort of swimming trunks and towels and rush mats for them to lie on the beach and all this sort of thing. It was very good. Oh, we used to sell suntan lotion too in those days.
Would you keep long hours in the summer?
Yes, I used to open up about 9. First job, clean the windows every morning. Clean the windows, brush the front, clean the windows, and put my signs out and postcards out, because we used to put the postcards out on the front then. Now you'd be it's frowned upon, that sort of thing, but we used to do it and had no complaints. So, and then by that time the staff would be coming in. And
how many?
Well, we had at one time, we used to have one, two, three, myself and Phil. We used to have five working there.
Yeah.
Five. And then sometimes we'd have somebody in over dinner. And sometimes we had one lady who was very, very good. She was, well, we had a lot of good staff, really, but this particular lady was only a part-timer, and she was supposed to come in at 12 and finish at 2. So anyway, sometimes you'd be there and there'd be a mad rush, all hands to the pump, and I'd look at my watch and it would be getting near 2, and I'd say to her, "Jenny, are you watching your time?" "Yes, yes, I'm all right, I'm all right." And she'd stay there till 3 or more, you know, until the rush had subsided, and it was very much appreciated, I can tell you. Because we were busy, and it's a seasonal shop. You've got to be busy in the summer or it's no good, because you're not taking much in the winter. And then we had a very good assistant, a very good friend, really. She was. We're still friends. And she was working for Moore's Mill out at St. John's. She was a weaver. And I used to employ her mother when I first started, because I had two shops, and she was previously employed by the previous owners. So when I took the shop, I was the rep for Harbatters, and I used to call on the shop, the sweet shop where Moira's is now. And one day I was in, it was a fellow called Fred Bartholomew had it, and Fred and I were having a little chat, and he said to me, "Oh, by the way, Harry," he said, "are you taking the Suvi shop?" So I said, "Yeah, that's right, Fred, and the gift shop." So he said, "Well, Mrs. So-and-so, I won't mention names, was asking me, did I know anything about it?" And I said that I knew the guy that was taking it. So she said, "Oh, I'd like to meet him." So I said, "Well, where is she, and what, you know, how can I get in touch with her?" So he said, "Oh, hang on, I'll go and get her." So he went across the road and he brought this lady back, and I said to her, you know, that I was taking the gift shop, and I believe that she was previously employed there. So she said, "Well, yes, I was," she said, "but I don't suppose I am now." So I said, "Well," I said, "if you're prepared to work for me, you still are." So she said, "Oh, yes, I'd be only too pleased. When do we start?" So I said, "Well," this was getting up towards Easter, like. So I said, "Oh, we're going to open for Easter, if that's convenient for you. If not, say so, and we won't open that one." So she said, "Oh, yes," she said, "I'll be pleased to do it." So I said, "Well, pop and see me. I'm coming down to the souvenir shop on Saturday, my day off, like, and we'll have a little chat, we'll arrange matters and talk money." So she said, "Oh, that's very good, thank you very much." So Saturday came, and she came along. I was down, I was working during the day, but it was nice weather, and Phil had opened up because we had stock in, and I used to take a load of stuff down, and she would be down putting it away while the door was open. There'd be customers strolling in, like locals and, you know, kiddies and that. And we took a few coppers, like, there while she was setting up. So anyway, Saturday came, the lady came along, and we talked business. I said, "Well, I don't know what you were doing before," but she said, "Well, I was working 6 days a week." So I said, "Well, what about your day off?" So she said, "Well, I used to have one day off in the week, and Mr. So-and-so, Mr. Peckett, who was the previous owner, used to go over and mind the shop." So I said, "Well, we'll run it that way for a while, if that's okay with you." And I said to her, "Now, I'm offering so much an hour, and any hours you work, you're paid for." "Oh, thank you, that's very kind." You see, she was happy enough. So anyway, she was there for, first year, second year, two years, I think she had. And then she unfortunately, the shop was was closed. But anyway, she'd previously in that winter she was taken into hospital and died, unfortunately. So that was the tale of that shop. But I used to go over on a Friday. She used to have Friday off. She insisted on Friday. She said, all the other days are quite busy, she said, but Friday's a quiet day, so I'll have that one off. So I used to keep her stocked. I used to go over every morning with stock, mostly sort of buckets and spades and stuff like that, you know, that she used to sell over there, and, you know, anything she was short of, any good line that we had in the shop, she'd say, what are you selling in your shop? I'd say, well, we're having a good run on such and such a thing at the moment. Well, can I have some? Yeah, of course you can. Bang it over there. And if we ran out in our place, I'd nip back and pick it up and sell it in our shop.
Did you ever have any sort of mad or things happening with customers?
Oh, yeah. We used to
amazing incidents.
We used to have some weird people coming in. We used to have some lovely people coming in too, you know. Because in those days, Peel was a sort of a family-run resort, really. You'd get people that come over to the island year after year, and they'd, you know, that you got to know them after a few years. I was 19 years in that shop, you know. It's a long time to be in one business. So anyway, we had some funny people coming in, but the overall, I think the nice people were,
what sort of things would they do, you know, the good customers when they came in? And
oh, yes, they'd buy stuff and they'd come in every day for, you know, people smoked in those days. They'd buy the fags and the kids would buy their ice cream and buckets and spades when they first came over, and sun hats if it got hot. And then they'd come in and they'd say, oh, we got sunburnt, we're at the races today. Little girl, we had one little girl, she was very fair and pale skinned, you know, and she came in one day and she was absolutely burnt, you know, it was really awful. So my wife took her in the back of the shop, and she had some chamomile lotion there, and she plastered her with that, and the mother was so grateful because she couldn't get to a doctor in time. But anyway, they did get off, go and sit down on the chair. He's a pest, isn't he?
I don't mind him. You settle, my dear.
John doesn't want you on his lap.
Uh-oh. I'm sorry, purring is not allowed because that's noise.
Just switch off and move.
Hang on a minute.
Send him on his way.
Stop transcribing, Muriel. Right, you were just saying about the customers.
We used to get some over the years that were very nice, and there was one or two that we didn't care for, but well, the good ones outnumbered the bad ones, really.
That's good.
Some of them were very difficult and awkward, you know, rather awkward. But been at it long enough to handle that sort of thing. Used to get some of these day trippers coming in, and they'd be sort of helping themselves, like, surreptitiously. But I used to say, now, put it back. And that used to be enough then. And sometimes if I was feeling a bit expansive, I'd say, I've been in this trade long enough to know what's going on. This is anything that you think of, I've come across several times in my life, so don't think there's any, you've got a new angle, because you haven't. And that used to stop them in their tracks. But as most people were very, very nice people. We've met some very good friends. As a matter of fact, when you called last night, we had two people that on the second year we were in business, instead of putting the money in the bank, I used the money to restore the cottage which we owned also at the back of the shop. It was a more or less derelict, really, and it was ready to fall down, but I had the roof repaired. It had been on fire, actually. I had the roof repaired, new roof put on, and once we got it watertight, I started on the inside, and we stripped every bit of plaster off that wall, off those walls, refloored for from top to bottom, did it all myself, you know, like in the winter time. And when I got the roof repaired, I used to go down there in the winter and work down there. And sometimes it got, I'd finish work on, you know, in the winter time when it's dark at 3 or 4 o'clock, I'd finish work and the light, there was only one electric light there, I used to carry around. And sometimes the floors at the outset, when I started the job first, the floors were all up and it was a matter of walking from beam to beam. And of course, when it got dark, you used to think, aye, gosh, no, it's...
I was going to ask you, actually, about other things that, you know, what else would you do in the winter? You'd be doing the shop.
Well, this took...
And the house.
This took quite a number of years' work. I was 3 years, like, on doing this job. And many a time I used to get out, used to park the car out the front. And living in Douglas at that time, and I'd finish work in the house, come out, sit in the car, and I think, what am I doing? What am I doing? I'm way over my head, you know, because it was a big job. But anyway, eventually it got to the stage, you got the floors in, and I started putting up studding for the plasterboard interior. It was all lined out throughout with the plasterboard, and you know, it was quite a big job, really. But yeah, when it was finished, it was really lovely inside. And we lived there for a couple of 3 years or more. In the summer, we used to live in Douglas in the winter, but we used to come down to live in the cottage, save travelling, so much travelling in the time. And we lived there for, well, a few years, really, in the summer.
Just thinking back to the shop, could you sort of give me a sort of picture in words of it, of what you'd see when you'd go in, you know? Say you come up to the souvenir shop in your mind's eye.
Yes, well, there was a window on either side with a little sort of... the shop doorway was set in by about a yard, you see, so you had a little porchway there. You'd come in through the door, and on the left-hand side would be the back of the window, left and right of you as you came in through the door, was covered in like a glass sliding doors. On the left-hand side was the fridge, the ice cream in, and then the sweet counter, and then going along in toward the shop, there'd be a longish counter with glass cabinets on the top, filled with the pottery items, you know, and stuff like that. Back of the counter would be shelving. On the first part of the counter would be sort of, what would you put on that? There was films at the back of the counter, cigarettes, films, suntan lotion, all that sort of stuff, you know. And further along, as you went further into the shop, shelves again with pottery ware or glassware or something on. We used to have a good line in crystal glass, actually. It was very cheap and pretty good, you know. It was nice quality stuff. And but I tried many a time to raise the standard of our merchandise, but it didn't work, actually, you know. There were lines that I was practically giving away in the cut glass. They were really quality stuff and, you know, dirt cheap, but they just didn't sell. So you've got to have stuff that sells. So you're more or less forced to buy what they call flash, really, rubbish.
So you go past the cut glass and what do you see if you keep going round?
There was a stand at the end of that counter. And it used to have fishing nets and cricket, you know, sort of plastic cricket sets and tennis sets and things hanging on that. And in front of that counter was a sort of racks made that held spades, you know, from the small scoop spades that you'd sell to kiddies, like small things like overgrown spoons, really, up to huge things that people used to buy to dig their borders with. They were so, you know, so sturdy. But and then in front of that there were buckets, of course. We had a lot of buckets there, and sometimes there would be sort of stuff that they'd use on the beach, like mats or rolled up and just stuck in the racks.
So it was like a rectangle with counters on three sides.
Yeah.
Yes, was there ever a counter in the middle? I can't remember.
No, there was. In the middle, there was. We used to have to keep that for the postcards. We used to have postcards in the middle of that. And I often thought, you know, postcards. They were a good line at one time, but they got to be a little bit slow at the end because the postage went up to such an extent, you know, that it was quite expensive. When we first started, we were selling postcards at sixpence, and the postage was twopence halfpenny, 2.5 old pence, I'm talking about now, not 2.5p, twopence halfpenny. So that was very reasonable. Postcards were, we used to sell thousands of postcards. When we took the